back to What Have You. I'm Rachel Jankovic.
I'm Becca Merkel.
And it's a beautiful spring day in the Idaho.
It's all that. It's just incredible out.
It's the kind of day that makes you forget that there have been days that are bleary and rainy. It's like, why haven't I done all the yard work? Why am I so far behind? Anyways.
It's just so nice when everything actually starts meaning it. You know, it's like, oh, it's real. It's green. It's actual green coming up.
I've said this. This is related. And I know I've said this before on the podcast, but I still think it's just the funny hilarity of the human heart. So I'm going to say it again.
Yeah, do it.
That when you have one of these exceptional days where it all comes together, the sun is shining, you got stuff done, things are going better than ever. There's no hint of a headache to mar your world.
I always call those my moving sidewalk days.
Oh, it's just magic.
It's like a little effort, huge impact.
And you just are so excited about it. And I feel like the fatal error every time one of those comes your lucky way is to think this is how they all are supposed to be.
Well, or just like, this will be my new normal. This is what I'll do tomorrow.
This is my baseline. Anything that doesn't meet this level of excellence is actually me getting ripped off somehow. Instead of thinking, like, thank you, Lord, that was such a gift.
It was excellent.
Sort of like thinking, you know, I think you could do that in any area. Like, you go out with your husband on a fun date, but it's like the food is amazing. You had a really fun time. There were good things to talk about. And then you go out some other time and you're both just staring into the middle distance because you're very tired and whatever. And instead of just being thankful for what God gives you when he gives it to you, feeling like this doesn't count as a date night because it wasn't as fun as I wanted it to have been. Or this, you know, whatever.
Sure.
And I just think so much of my life is trying to organize my own productivity.
I don't know if you've ever spoken a truer word, Rach. I feel like, why is it always the constant troubleshoot of like,
how can I be effective with the things that I have to do?
Why do I have a junky pile in my hall? How is this happening?
Right?
Yeah. I have a junky pile in my hall. And I was, on my way out here. I was pondering that junky pile and thinking it must be gone by the end of the day.
Yeah, how did this happen?
It's a junky pile that has accumulated because people set things there when they don't know where else to set them.
Yeah.
Which means every single unit in the pile has literally no home and I don't know what to do about it. Like, what would you do with a box set of Tintin DVDs that are European?
What does it mean that they're European?
Like, they would only work in a DVD player that was set to the European model. Like, you know, and you can do that, but you can only...
I'd get rid of those.
There's a little hack that you can do.
Yeah, but
that makes it American or European. Well, we don't even have a DVD player, but it's also like, my kids would be like, Mom, those are the Tintin videos.
Let me recommend
that.
Give them, follow in your mother's footsteps and give them to one of the kids.
Yeah, but they
be like, you are the steward of these. If you give them to Goodwill,
they'll be like, save it for me.
And I would say, no. This is your one hot chance. Yeah.
And I don't even know how those came to be in the hall because I don't know where they came from. Because I could have sworn those had been packed away in a box in the basement or something. And I'm sure they came out with a box, got set somewhere, got moved. Anyway, it's like, you know how a dust bunny collects under your bed? It kind of like, you know, all the bits and bobs finally find their way together into a dust bunny in the corner. And I think your actual belongings do that too. Like they swirl into a dust bunny. And that's what I've got, is a dust bunny.
It's also known as the broken window theory. As you are making a pile, then the pile, it starts thinking of new ideas.
Well,
I just saw it. Where did I read this about alcohol? It's a funny quote about alcohol. Okay. Now let me see if I can remember it. It was specifically...
I'm really curious about your tie-in with alcohol, but anyway, go for it.
Yeah, I know, right? It was first you take a drink, then your drink takes a drink, and then the drink takes you. That was a thing, and I noticed it because it was funny, because it was someone, Francis Scott Key Fitzgerald, said Whoa. That. And I was like, Whoa. Wow, lots okay. of layers. Anyways, it wasn't an unrelated incident that I happened upon this, but what I'm saying is it's like that. First you put the things you don't know what to do with, then they take a few things themselves, and the next thing you know, the whole pile has taken you over. The
next thing you know, there's a snarl of hangers because somebody cleaned out their closet and didn't need
Sometimes
them
Sometimes you put to an unrealistic level of import on something that just can't matter that much to you, and I've realized this in like specific areas, like the lost socks. Sure. Like I don't actually need to wait until every bedroom has for sure been cleaned out all the way and every laundry has been done, and then all of the socks. Sometimes if I find a not really hot lone sock in the batch, it's okay to just let it go without the ceremony of trying to reunite it.
My problem there is that you throw one away because you're like, it'll be fine, it's been lost forever. Then the other one shows up, but you don't remember if you threw the other one away.
But this is why you just throw them away in once. You just don't even care. It doesn't matter. Salad. And once you've thrown them both away one at a time,
I think
it will never haunt you again.
I think you just don't know if you've thrown the other one away. That's the thing.
But I'm saying you don't need to know. If you found one by itself, you don't need to know if it's a real loner or if it is.
True.
I have a collection of nice socks, which I would not do that to. Like the one-off the one-off socks of Darn Tufts or whatever. Sure. I wait until...
I will say, though, I'm pretty sure that I throw away socks at a speed that is three times as great as the rate at which I buy socks. And yet...
Yeah.
It's forever.
It's a miracle.
Yeah.
Well, all this is to say, my own productivity is like my main game going.
It's a whole question.
And something that I find very funny is that huge stretch goal for me. I mean, we have to be firing on all cylinders all day, is 3 1-hour time blocks. Of stuff that I'm working on.
That's incredibly ambitious, Rachel.
Three separate
1-hour blocks is insane.
From 8 in the morning, and I guess I'm wrapping my day up around 4.
Okay.
That's a lot more hours than 3.
Well, yeah, no, but it's not 3 hours.
By 4, I'm moving on to doing dinner and stuff.
Yeah. No, but I think what I'm saying is that 3 actual uninterrupted hour blocks is, that's tough. That's
right. Well, they're not. So 1 hour I'm doing with Ezra on therapy in the morning, and I'm trying to do that. Like in this hour, I wouldn't answer my phone. I'm not doing anything else. This is a big change for me because it had been luring me into unproductive work habits, which is, if you start doing the therapy and then he wants to play with a toy or something, you have a little window. I'm like, I better throw in a load of laundry. Like I'm trying to get all the rest of my responsibilities also underway and then popping back in. And then what ends up happening is it haunts you for the whole day because you're just not, there's too much of it to make progress on it in between. But if I do a whole uninterrupted hour, then what remains after that, which is probably another hour worth, fits into the rest of the day in a far more natural way. Like the momentum is with me. We're doing okay.
Yeah.
We're going to make this happen.
Yeah.
But then I'm trying to do the 1 hour of cleaning, 1 hour of therapy, and a third hour of writing, which I basically never do. Never get to it.
That one is always dangling around on my to-do list, and also I don't do it.
Brutal. You can't, at what time is it right to sit down? And it's very hard. But all this is to say, I find it very funny that out of my daily 8 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, also, I have a very offensive thing that I realized that I was like, I've just figured it out. You know when people listen to a book on audio?
Yes.
But they're like, I've read that?
Yes.
And you're like, no, you haven't.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know why I feel that way about it. I get it. You're getting the content. But I feel like you have to say, I listened to that.
Yeah. I'm with you.
And this is just true. You have to, and I don't care. I don't think it's necessarily an inferior way to get the material, but it's different.
It is different.
And so I mind it when we act like we've been reading, when we've been listening.
Yeah.
And it just struck me the other day that this is the same as placing an online grocery order and saying you went to the store.
Oh, but who does that?
No, they don't, because everyone recognizes that would be weird to say, I went to the grocery store.
Well, see, because, this is
funny. But the thing is that you can place an order me the groceries, which I do, and get other things done in the same time.
Yes.
I did not commit all the time it would actually take me.
Yes.
I did not actually take me to the grocery store and only do the groceries.
Right. Right.
And that's the thing with, I think, an audiobook is that if you sat down with a real book, all of your attention has to be on that.
Yeah.
If you're listening to an audiobook, you might just like to have something going while you're on your walk or while you're cleaning your house or whatever. It just is a different operation.
Yeah. Or you're texting and having a different
conversation. But I just realized that is the parallel that explains to me how I feel about it.
It's funny because I have that same exact thing. But also, okay, I have multiple things that I need to all say at the same time. Say all at the same time.
Okay, I'm ready.
That garbled. One is, this is very similar to my hilarious peeve that I used to be far more sensitive to, but when I was just having kids, I haven't noticed it in a long time. But maybe I'm just not in those conversations. But when people would say, all of my pregnancies have been thus and such, but they have one baby, I'm like, that's you've used the incorrect word. You can just say my pregnancy was, not all my pregnancies were. And when you have two babies, you can also say both. We have a word for that, and it's both. And so when you say all, when you mean two, it just, for some reason, it just kind of gets me. And then when I had three, I would say all three of my. But when I hit four, that's when I was like, now you can say all my pregnancies or all my
just
kids
about
or
the accuracy
all my
of
babies
language.
Or whatever. There's that. But I have something to say back on the audiobook thing. And I think that this is something that particularly if you're a homeschooler, you should think about.
Okay. I'm ready.
The existence of autocorrect, when you're texting, the existence of automatically flagged and correcting spelling when you're typing in a document, and then the listening to audiobooks instead of reading them, you could easily produce a child who can't spell worth a darn. And that's an actual thing. And I think it's funny because it kind of used to be the stereotype that homeschoolers were, you know, rocking every spelling bee in the nation. It was like, that was amazing. But I do think that partly it was because of how much they were reading all the time.
Right.
And I think I have seen a lot of moms just kind of like online talking about homeschooling their kids where they're listening to books all day rather than reading books all day. And I just think this is one of those double check, guys. Just double check that you're not leaving something crazy out of your calculations, because I feel like technology is easy to
especially when you have a bunch of kids.
Thinking.
You can find out very easily with a lot of shock and awe that someone in your midst got way too old to not know how to tie their shoes.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's because you weren't tracking with the fact that they've only had Velcro sneakers.
Right.
And then when the Velcro sneakers are no longer purchasable in their size and you hand them a pair of tie-ups and they're like, how do I do this? And you're, those things come as a shock because you think, no.
Oh yeah.
You know how.
Well, when I was homeschooling.
Why don't you know how?
When I was homeschooling for 3 years, guys, I forgot about cursive. Totally forgot. I forgot it was a thing. And so it was like, oh no. Oh dear, dear, dear. I completely spaced that little tidbit.
That little glitch.
That little glitch. But all I'm saying is that I do think sometimes like technology, you go along and you're not like totally thinking about other ways it might impact stuff. And I'm just saying homeschoolers, because you could completely do this if your kids are in school, but only if the teachers don't care that they're listening rather than reading. And at least when I was a teacher, when kids would say, like, because I was teaching Lit, and kids would say, can I listen to this book instead of read it? And I was like, I don't care if you listen to it, but you have to read it. So you read along if that's what you need to do, but like...
Well, some people find that really helps them pay attention to their Bible reading, is to like listen and read it at the same time. And I've been in a long spree right now since Ezra, really, of listening to my Bible reading, because my normal pattern that I was doing got disrupted by nursing a baby. It's like hard to, that the time frame where I was reading in my Bible was, now I was nursing, and it's, and it just didn't, it was just more, it's like my schedule getting, and I am an advocate of doing what you can do to get it done.
Definitely.
So I don't feel at all guilty that I have been listening to my Bible, but I'm also starting to get that. I'm real ready to get back to, like, because it is not the same. It does not mean that it's bad, but it is not the same thing. And both of them are good for you, but I think I would suppose that just reading it in your Bible would be fine for you, but I would say not just relying on the audio forever. I think you're missing something.
But I think that like audiobooks are awesome for like supplementing, getting more done in less time. Like you can garden and listen to something,
your mind,
or you
busy
can walk
while you're doing stuff that's repetitive work.
Like that's totally great, but you are right. It isn't the same skill. And so, you know,
one thing that can happen to people though is that like you can let your mind wander when you're reading sometimes, that you're thinking about other things while you're looking at the page. Anyways, it was basically all of it is about disciplining your mind to engage with things. Yeah. And if you're basically better at listening because you're doing your busy work with your hands, like I'm doing the dishes and I can listen, it's great. But just don't think it doesn't matter that you don't discipline the control to be able to read God's word, or with your kids,
you can
wanting
space
them to be
off
able to read
you're
a book.
Listening too. I mean, like,
totally.
I don't,
spacing off has something we can do with all.
I don't listen to things often, but when I do, it's absolutely, you realize, wait, I've got to back this
what
up like
6 minutes
because
especially if something floats by that you find of interest and you start then thinking
you go
about
down
it, you're like doing a different mental
thing. I have to say something though, you brought up Bible reading and I need to say a thing about Jeremiah really quick because we just finished that, right?
Jeremy the prophet.
And this just struck me this time, and it made me laugh, because it turns out that it is a little truth that transcends time. Remember the bit where the people decide to go down to Egypt, and he tells them no, and they drag him down to Egypt anyways, and he's ripping them a big one about the way they've been worshiping the Queen of Heaven, and they say, now we're going to worship the Queen of Heaven even more.
Yeah.
So it's in that little episode.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, your fathers, your kings and their wives, and you and your wives. So that's the list of people. He says, your fathers, your kings and their wives, and you and your wives have been doing these bad things. And then there's this big huffy response from the people. And you can tell that the people in this case is the women, because they end the whole thing by saying, and did we pour out drink offerings and bake cakes for the Queen of Heaven without our men? So you can tell that it's the women.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hilarious because the women are feeling called out, and they say, why aren't you talking to the men about their sin?
Never happens. It's like, I don't know.
It's so funny. And when you go back over the list, your fathers, your kings, their wives, you and your wives, and the women all say, why aren't you talking to the men?
I was struck.
Which is like, you say something about modesty.
Oh, anything.
And all the women.
Why do you think it's a women's problem?
why men are don't bad you too. Talk to the men?
Men also are bad. Like, well, we know this. This has been an established tidbit throughout history.
I just felt like that was, like, it turns really out funny. That
Jeremiah has experienced it all.
Yeah.
We also had, I was surprised. It's possible I've been surprised by this in the past, and I've just forgot it, you know? Mm-hmm. Which, because my mind being what it is, it loses track of some things mm-hmm. sometimes. Mm-hmm. But this time, as I was listening along to Jeremiah, I just leapt out at me the hilarity of when he says your God is like a scarecrow in a cucumber field. Oh. And I was like, what? He said, you even have to carry him around.
That's funny.
And I'm like, how did I miss this scarecrow?
What version?
Okay, that does happen sometimes because I read NKJV and I listen to either KJV or ESV.
Okay.
But when I listen to ESV, it often does things that surprise me.
Yeah.
But the scarecrow of the cucumber field was like, and somehow I got really distracted thinking about this because I was like, wait, it even sounds like more insulting that it's cucumbers.
Yeah, that's really funny.
I'm going to look it up, see
I'll
if
like
I,
it.
That's how Jeremiah mocked the idols of the age. Like a scarecrow in a cucumber field, their idols cannot speak. They must be carried because they cannot walk.
Yeah, that's really funny.
And do not fear them because they're stupid. That's pretty much the whole.
So I just always feel really depressed for Jeremiah when they throw him down that hole.
The cistern?
And you know that was like the outhouse or something. Like, it's just horrific.
Yeah. He had a rough go.
Awful.
Yeah.
Just awful.
Real bad.
I know.
Yeah. And I feel like I can't even keep up with the plot of Jeremiah. Like, I'm like, I need...
You know what I did this time before we started Jeremiah, and it was helpful, is I looked up that...
Bible,
the one that gives you like
It was
like a 7-minute summary,
I did it
before
Bible
I started.
Project. Is that what it's called?
I kept meaning
to go look that up.
Yeah,
I remember watching that one for Jeremiah because sometimes you're just like, wow, I am not tracking with what we're talking about so well as I ought to. And that's always the fatal error in Job. If you're not tracking with Job, you get a lot of surprises.
So,
Job is the one where you're like thinking, good point.
And here's
then,
the thing
and
though,
then the Lord rebukes him.
I feel like that is the case where a lot of people fall for things, fall for little internet fads, fall for little Christianity fads that are here and there, where, like, I was thinking about this because Job's friends, if you were to block off the context and just simply read these three verses come from Job's friends, almost all of it is completely good, solid
stuff. Well, that's what I mean, is that you're always in the middle of being like, amen, and then the Lord rebukes them from a whirlwind.
Right, and it's because put all of those true things together and you've actually created something that is inaccurate.
Yeah.
And it's like they did the math wrong. They put together a whole bunch of true things and then they came out with a faulty conclusion.
This is a thing that came up a little while ago, talking to someone who was saying true things, but where you feel like, but this is not true. You know, like something, and it was kind of like, the thing is, it is, and we talked about this, so the last episode that we did was the safety goggles one, right? Where we were saying, don't get this around backwards. Don't get what you're pursuing to be something chasing you in guilt.
Yeah.
Like, don't do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a kind of a version of that, but I think it's another thing that's probably common, is that idea that sacrifice, like that Christians are called to lay their life down. You're called to sacrifice your life for your children, for your husband. Absolutely, that's good. But knowing that that's what we believe you ought to do, it can make people say things like, well, it's just my job to just lay down my life and just have
time.
Have a horrible hard time. And the thing when this came up is like, it's always my job to have the worst part of everything.
Sure.
To do the hardest, to be sad, to have the whatever. This is just my job. Because we're supposed to sacrifice ourselves all the time. Right. And I was saying, like, I can't think of a time when I've known, I mean, there's a lot of times in your life that you're trudging along and you're like, ah, here I am at the crossing where I can go left in the way of self-sacrifice or right in the way of self-indulgence. And I know full well which one I ought to do. And there, but there is nonetheless a confrontation with your flesh. You're having a moment of like, you know, I have to do this. Yeah. I can't think of a single time in my life where you pony up to the self-sacrifice that isn't pretty much immediately followed by joy and peace and and rightness. Sure. It's not like when you choose to lay your life down for your family, because we serve a God that is all about death and resurrection and actually life and life abundant in Him. So when you're laying your own life down, you're laying it down for greater life. You're not laying it down for less. You're not like, and of course there are circumstances where that could be short term. It could feel just like less, like it could just be very hard. But I don't think it, I'm like, but you're actually in fellowship with God, which means tremendous pleasure and peace. Right. And
well, and I think some people are naturally going to maybe lean into the, like, I guess I just have to be miserable all the time. And other people are going to lean into the, like, no, the Bible is all about, you know, like, not being Gnostic and having, like, delight in the physical world. And that means I'm going to have a wild amount of self-indulgence or something. And I think, you know, if you think about the, is it Ecclesiastes? There's a time for, you know, to everything. Turn.
A time for to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing.
And I think that there's a lot of people who grab
every season. turn.
Yes. There's people who naturally want to grab onto one half or the other half and absolutize it.
Well, I'll be like, but I'm a real embracer.
Yeah, but it's kind of like Hebrews. The, you know, like, some of them overcame and some of them were sawn in two. It's like,
but it's all the triumph, but some of them... Yeah,
and I do think that all these little, you know what I mean by the kind of little Christianity fads that sweep through every so often? I think the thing that is, that tells you whether it's kind of imbalanced is whether it's all on one half of the teeter-totter, you know? Right. And so, because I think scripture's pretty clear.
Anytime that someone's wanting to give you the, these are the magic bullet points,
or that just that this is what it's always going to look like, is it's always going to look like,
right,
you know, feasting, or perpetual. It's always going to look like fasting, or it's always going to look, and I think part of the wisdom is that Job's friends thing of recognizing that, like, okay, that's true, the thing you're saying is true, but it's not true here. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I think maybe my thought has been that we just, that in circles where it is respected to be self-sacrificial, to be thinking, like women, and this is the problem. If you don't recognize that the reason it's good to be self-sacrificial is because of your life with God, not because by doing that you're now going to get to be in control of everything with your family or some, I think what I'm trying to say really here is that I think that can set you up for the world's massive lies about self-indulgence, because you're not pursuing Christ in the self-sacrifice, and you're not pursuing, you're just like, well, I guess the thing is that I always have to be the one getting the short straw.
Well, the thing is, self-sacrifice done in an ungodly way actually is just another way of being self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Because we all know what it feels like to get yourself into a little pouty sulk where you are feeling really bad for yourself, and that's actually a way of being self-indulgent. Is like,
yeah, you're like, stroking something. You're
almost going to steer yourself into a worse time just so that you can watch yourself have a worse time. And then won't they all...
Right, like, watch me again have to be the one who's the only one doing the dishes and having a watch me...
And being unappreciated.
Watch me. Yeah, and I've... And
you know what? If imagine for a second that you're sitting at the end of the table feeling put out that no one recognizes your work. Yeah. Okay? And let's say you're indulging that little mood. And then your husband is like, that was really good. Thank you. If that kind of ruins your day.
That puts you off.
If you feel yourself going too little too late, Jack, you know, then... That tells you you're in a real, actually not self-sacrificial at all, rather wildly self-indulgent
mood. One of the things that I think, I mean, this ties in with what we talked about last time a little bit, is that there are all kinds of places that I could sacrifice myself that I don't. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is, if you start getting into this victimhood time, this idea of total misery that you're going to, like, that your life is going to be made up of all these difficulties. Well, like, there are times that I'm like, could I self-sacrifice myself and push myself through a physical barrier to try to do the dishes at night because I decided that they have to be done tonight and no one else is available? And the reality is, it also would be okay for you to go to bed.
Yeah.
And be like, I'm going to handle this in the morning with a fresh face. Like, I'm going to not get into this.
But see, again, this is where the whole, like, kind of, like, balancing act is because other people who perennially can't make themselves do the dishes and are always putting it off to tomorrow probably ought to learn the lesson of, like, nope, you need to get up and get it done. Like,
right. And I think it's a thing about, it's a real thing about knowing that you are working hard. Like, mm-hmm. like, well, that there are just times to be like, I can't swing that right now. I'll have to come, like, back on that.
Constantly, like, you know, when you're driving, you're constantly just little course corrections, like, we're drifting a little right. I'm going to just a little correction to get back on the road, drifting a little left, little course correction. And you kind of do it without thinking about it. But the way you're doing it is you're looking further down the road and making sure that you're centered, right? You're watching those lines or you're watching those signposts. And I feel like that's what the Christian life really has to be like, is you have to have your eye on something other than the immediate location of your tires right this second. You have to be looking at the posts on the side. Like, what does God's word say about this? It seems like I'm drifting a little this way. I've got to pull back.
Totally. And maybe this sounds silly, but, like, to take the dishes example, I can easily imagine a world where the dishes at our house is something I need to lay my life down about.
Yeah.
Where there's a lot of dishes. And
yeah,
everyone is obligated to be in other places. Mm-hmm. And it's not ultimately their problem. It's my problem. Mm-hmm. But it is one of the times where you could come up with a way to feel like this is everybody else's problem, sure, too.
Yeah.
But it's funny because on the one hand, you could be like, I have to lay down my life and stay up really late by myself trying to get mm-hmm. this all done, and it's going to be so hard.
Right.
Or you have to lay down your life by being jolly about what it means about your tomorrow. Like, laying down your life by being... this is what I'm going to do in the morning without being complaining or blaming people or having a time. Like, I'm just going to do this. Right. And I feel like the problem is sometimes that the thing that drives you to choose the one that would be far more arduous and, like, out on the skinny branches of your physical situation or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, say you're pregnant, you're tired, you're strung out, your legs are aching, but for some reason you're like, it would be a massive spiritual failure to do this tomorrow. I have to do this tonight. You might just be making weird standards for yourself where you could say, I'm going to do this.
Some of this is actually being brutally honest with yourself about your actual own temptations, because
but also your own abilities. And like, would your husband,
like, I'm talking about like the more fundamental level of, is this something you need to mortify in yourself? Not like when it comes down to just the logistics.
No, like would this like, appeal to my flesh?
So I think like, are you actually really tempted towards sloth and laziness? You know
or
what I mean?
You're like, tempted towards doing the dishes while whispering about heaping burning coals upon their heads.
No, but or like, are you tempted towards perfectionism and, you know, like, I think that it really matters that you be leaning against your own temptations and not the temptation that you actually wouldn't ever fall into, but you like to pretend like you're guarding
but
against.
But also, yeah, the because it, fire hydrants and flood situation.
Yes, because, like, you could be actually a very lazy person and you're making excuses for yourself by saying you're leaning against perfectionism. You know what I mean? When it's like, no, that's not really your problem. Your problem is...
Right.
Or you could be thinking that you're guarding against laziness when you're actually indulging in
It's a really tricky thing because you do actually need to cut with the grain of your own temperament and abilities. Like when I said I'm working all the time on productivity stuff, I have a clearer perspective of my own weaknesses on what I'm doing. But if I just tried to target all of my weaknesses constantly, I would not be stewarding my strengths. And it's kind of like what we actually need to do is weed the garden and also grow the plants. We can't get so fascinated with killing the weeds.
I think
that we kill it all.
There's a difference here because I think we're both kind of weaving in and out of two different categories.
Sure.
One is like actual sin issues, like really sin issues. And the other one, your sort of natural temperament and personality is going to dictate where your temptations are and where you're going to veer into sin. You know what I mean? Like certain things you just won't be tempted towards and other things you might be tempted. And somebody else might have,
sure.
You know, like I just don't understand the temptation to like gambling, for instance. That one wouldn't occur to me. But there are some people for whom that would be a genuine whatever. Doesn't Lewis talk about this maybe in Mere Christianity?
About it. I think it's actually in his in Surprised by Joy because it was about all the gay stuff at his...
No, I think it's Mere Christianity where he's saying that like, but I think he even uses the example of gambling. And he says, but probably because I'm not tempted that way, there's some other strength that those people have, maybe generosity,
oh, sure, yeah,
that I don't have because I, you know what I mean? So there's actual genuine like sin problems you can get into and those you just have to have zero right. tolerance with yourself about. But then there's like just your own nature, the character and personality that God has given you and the strengths and your likes and dislikes and all those things that you can figure out how to cut with the grain of those without cutting with the grain of the sin. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like you have to...
It is so complicated because almost always our virtues and vices are so entangled that we, like, you tend to pride yourself on your vices almost because you know, because they're connected enough to your virtues that you might not notice them.
Mm-hmm.
Or like...
Mm-hmm.
You're like, well, this is my skills.
Right.
I'm so good at actually being really self-important.
So when you were talking about troubleshooting your productivity, I think that's the thing is like being honest with like, okay, this is what works for me and this is what is really like helpful and this is what's not helpful and trying to maximize that, but also recognizing this is where I'm tempted to sin in it.
Oh yeah.
And then having zero tolerance
there. I always think the more all in I am with trying to be effective, the harder it is for me to just roll with things that interrupt what you're doing.
Oh yeah.
And that I know to be a weakness, a sinful weakness to not be able to accommodate normal fluxes of things.
Because... Are you like tempted to get really snippy and impatient with everyone? Or are you tempted to just kind of lay on the couch and make excuses? Or are you tempted to like drive yourself really hard just to make everybody feel bad? Or, you know, like there's all
or to drive
of
yourself really hard
to make yourself
to
feel good.
Something.
Yeah.
You're trying to earn something or be impressed with yourself or find
And so it feels like the key is to like work in a way that is effective for you.
And but to, not, also, to not get like, wildly introspective about everything. But to sometimes it's really good to just say, Lord, bring it to my attention if there's something I need to
But see, some people are tempted to be introspective and other people are not. And so,
yeah.
Again, it's the, like, if you would never dream of being introspective, it might mean you might need to take a little look-see. And if you are tempted to be introspective, maybe you should stop looking.
So basically what we're telling you all to do is whatever you want to do, do the opposite. And whatever you think you're good at, you're not. And whatever...
It's opposite day on what
have you. It's opposite day. Whatever. Whatever you think would be good, it's probably bad. Whatever you think would be bad, it's probably good.
No, but this is what I mean by, like, looking down the road. Look at, like, actual scriptural commands and then...
But also, don't be bizarre and uptight. I think that's, like... But that's looking, when we say look ahead down the road, that's part of it too. It's like, don't get in a seizure about what's happening right now, right here. But like, look at what are we aiming for? What are we going for? But
see,
for?
That's part of looking down the road is not being bizarrely uptight.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, look up ahead. And we said that the last time when I was saying, like, this is a much bigger vision than just this Easter. It's not like you, Lord willing, have many more. And like, sure. how can we be aiming towards what we want to be doing without getting discouraged that we're not there
yet? See, maybe our metaphor, we're using the same metaphor differently. But when I'm saying looking down the road at the sort of the signposts and the lines, I'm talking about scriptural guidance. Right. I don't mean down the line of the future. I mean like... What does the Bible say about my demeanor? And when I find myself getting lazy, pull back. When I find myself getting petty, pull back. When I find myself getting impatient, pull back. You know, where you're looking at those sort of guideposts of how ought I to be right now.
Right.
It's like, well, the fruits of the Spirit ought to be typifying your work. Like, is your work and is your productivity... full of love and joy.
Is it lovely and joyful and peaceful and patient?
Are you working joyfully before the Lord?
Kindly.
Right. Are you seeking to please Him in the right way without trying to earn your way into His presence, you know?
I think this is just really hard for... I think we're just in one of these special moments where so many of us... I am not counting myself in that when I say that. That sounded
so
funny.
Many of us
did not have a good example.
Oh,
I realize that makes it. I'm like, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, but so many women did not grow up with a good example of how to have a high standard and be pursuing it, and at the same time just be joyful and peaceful and not in a swizzle about it.
You know what?
And then you have to be that person for your own daughters.
Ben said something I thought quite profound the other day when we were talking about this, but he was actually applying it to a fatherlessness, the sort of general fatherlessness of the moment. But it applies equally to the motherlessness, which you're talking about, which is maybe you had a mother, but you've never seen actually an example of how this looks. Is he said one of the problems, so again, I'm repeating what he said about fatherlessness, is he said there's this whole generation of guys that sort of did grow up without that sort of masculine example. And he said, and one of the real sort of injuries that is there when people have that is that they start filling in an imaginary version of what it would have been like if I did have a dad.
Exactly.
And so then they conjure up this in their imagination what it would have been like if I had a dad.
Right.
And then they assume that that's what dads are like, when it's like, actually, no. Like, if you grew up with a dad, it was very different. Like, he wasn't, you know, like, it was different. And I think the same thing can happen with all of these women who are trying to recapture this sort of, what does it look like to be a homemaker in the 21st century right now?
Uh-huh.
And if they didn't have an example, it's very easy to conjure up this imaginary thing.
And then you're
trying to somehow create that, and it just isn't actually reality. And I think that can be some of the reason that women get themselves kind of strung out.
Well,
and
that's what I think on the dishes. The reason I was using that example is because I'm saying, I think I said this on the last one and I was laughing about it, that if I'm getting myself into a big swizzle of stress, like, mm-hmm. there is so much to do, there's no way we're going to get it done, I'm starting to feel very bogged down mm-hmm. by mm-hmm. that. When I am talking to my husband about it, he's like, tell me, what is it? And I always think it's hilarious when I'm like, I don't want to tell you what it is, because if I tell you what it is, you're going to be like, why are you doing that? And you're like, you don't understand. I would like the freedom to stress myself out about things that I know that you know that we all know are not important. Like, what I'm hoping to do is get in a swizzle about it, and you will kill joy that. You will say it's not important. And but that's kind of the genre that I meant, where you're like, I just have to lay my life down for everyone. And literally everyone would be like, why?
No, you don't. Like,
would you just go to bed, Mom? Everyone would feel better if you did not stay up late making artisanal pizza sauce. Like, we don't care.
And sometimes, it's true. There's all manner of weird coping mechanisms that we all come up with. But I feel like I would much rather sit down and plan a grand project that would take, I don't know, $500,000 in 6 years to complete, rather than going up and addressing, well, the junky pile in the hall. I would like to design a pavilion.
You're like, no, you don't understand.
That we could have in the backyard.
I have to make a folly.
And I would like a pavilion because I need to entertain, because the Bible says to be hospitable without grumbling.
It's gonna take a pavilion to get me there.
It's easy.
It's just such an important thing to, though, not put unbiblical standards. Like, once again, you see the brilliance of Scripture not even telling us what it is that women who are looking after their own homes ought to be doing. Just that you have to be doing that.
But see, okay, so that random example that I just pulled, I'm not, in fact, doing that, but let's say I easily could. Like, it would take me 3 seconds to go down the pavilion mm-hmm. road. But let's just say that I was making this a serious argument. The Bible clearly says to be hospitable. Like, that is a command.
Yeah.
You can't deny it. And I am doing this thing because of the command to be hospitable. I am going to build a pavilion.
Yeah.
It's going to be the godly, hospitable pavilion. And that's what I mean about going back to the Job's friends thing, where it's like, okay, you took a true thing and then you made it weird. You know what I mean? And you're neglecting, let's say I'm neglecting actually the house where I can't have anyone in, because you don't understand, I don't have my pavilion yet. And so I'm actually in a weird way ignoring the command for the sake of the command.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to get yourself into that with whatever it is. Like, you can talk yourself into thinking that the Bible clearly states that we ought to be feasting joyfully. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then you take that a weird direction. Or the Bible clearly teaches fasts, you know, and you take that a weird direction. I don't know. It's just,
turns out the human heart is a squicky old thing. And whatever, I think the summary is, whatever you're doing, it's probably wrong. And whatever we value is probably not valuable. Whatever. No. The reality is just doubt yourself more. Like, like, ask yourself more, what of this priority? And is it one that my husband would share? Because when I know I don't want to tell Luke what I think matters so much that it's that it's getting me into a place where I'm not at peace, that's a hot clue for me that what I'm doing is wrong.
Just think, as a general rule, this needs so many qualifications. I'm like, when you're faced with, like, you're here at a crossroads and you can go down the slope, the easy downward slope, or you can go up the difficult slope. It's usually the case that it's the difficult slope that's the godly one. And I don't mean overall it must be hard and terrible. What I mean is you have to cut against your own sinful tendencies. And what I mean by the downhill slope is when it's going to be a coast. It's going to be just your own easy glide.
It's not even necessarily hard versus easy. No, but sometimes that's what I mean. It's where the flesh yearns to go is very rarely the right choice.
But also,
everyone's... I would say that's the case if you feel like writing everyone a little...
Yeah, confront hot letter.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, but that's what I mean by...
not necessarily easy, but
everybody's two choices look different. Like, if you imagine that little signpost with the dishes, it might be for you just letting it go and going to bed is more difficult. It might be that going in there and putting on the rubber gloves is more difficult. You know what I mean? Like, it's...
Sure.
It's just the... Or for some people, it might be the downhill glide is to be a total perfectionist, confronty, impatient monster. And for other people, the downhill glide is just to roll with everything.
Nothing will show agreeable, from a trotting horse.
Never try.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just...
Yeah.
That... Leaning against your own sinful heart is the point.
Turns out that's our job.
And just remembering that your sinful heart is always trying to pull you one way. Like, it's like when you have one flat tire
pulling. I think that this is the maybe... So it's the world, the flesh, and the devil. Right now, the world is calling everyone to wild self-indulgence.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means that I think most of our listeners are aware that we're resisting the world.
Yeah.
Right? You're aware, and you can still be very influenced by it, but you're aware that we're not into that. But the flesh can be just as crazy to you, and it can go in a very different direction and that you think is resisting the world.
Right.
But that is actually just zooming off the trail the other way.
And recognizing that everyone's flesh is different.
Yeah.
And so you can see the way somebody else's flesh is pulling them. And it's always easy to have a hawk eye out about what other people's flesh is doing, but your own can be very difficult to really see.
Just remember that the devil's role, there's always accusation. And that sort of like, if you were a real Christian woman, you would fill in the blank, make your own sourdough. If you were a real Christian woman, you would not struggle to have this pile of junk in your hall.
Right.
If you were a real Christian woman.
Right.
And that's all just the devil's doing, and it doesn't get us anywhere good.
No.
So I think the ideal is definitely push back against the world, but don't push back against the world such that you're like,
the flesh.
It's exactly. If your flesh loves to take you on that trip down to the I'm a martyr on behalf of my family, then you should stop that.
And if your flesh loves to spend time on Instagram dreaming about your house rather than fixing your actual house, resist that.
Don't do that either. That also is a bad call. So, do you have a tip, Becca?
I did.
I do too, but I lose them.
Yeah, me too.
The brick. That's what I was going to say.
The brick.
I didn't say that last
the
time,
brick?
Did I? Yeah.
No.
I love it.
Okay.
So, I do recommend this. I think it's great.
What is it?
It's an app called The Brick, but it is also a... actual device that you can stick on your fridge. It's like an actual
thing. Luke brought
this
over. Yeah.
Oh, did he give you one? Because we didn't.
Yeah.
Because
we
didn't
out what
realize
it is.
That you could use it for multiple phones.
Okay.
So we had got two of them.
Yeah, so I need to figure out what it is.
Basically, with the app, you can go through and create. So I made a brick setting that is for at home. My phone is bricked right now, Becca, so I can't even really show you about it. But it is, what it is that to brick it or unbrick it, you have to go to the actual device and hit this on your phone and put your phone right on the thing that's on the fridge and it will unbrick it. But you can set custom settings to just block apps or things that you don't want access to. So mine that is at home, I have to use my phone a lot.
Yeah.
And I have to use it for, like, there's a lot of the things that are my work that I'm using my phone for.
Sure.
So I don't want to just do the thing where you're like, I just don't have my phone with me.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I can't be reachable for my children, and I can't, like, because I'm going to go do something Yeah, productive.
Yeah.
But you can do it where you block everything that is a time waste thing.
Oh, sure.
So I moved it around. So all the things that I don't need, that I never need to really do it for my job of life, are just blocked all the time.
Okay.
On my phone. But it just means
blocked all the time?
Well, what it means
is,
like,
why do you have them on there anyway?
Okay, so, like, I am actually an admin in a number of Facebook groups or whatever. Mm-hmm. I need to be able to see Facebook. But I don't need to be able to see it all day.
Sure.
All day, or anytime I sit down with Ezra to nurse, I don't need to check it. So all I do is go bop it on the fridge, and while I stand there, I can check Instagram or Facebook, see what I need to see, but I don't ever end up killing time on them because I just turn it back off and I don't have it. But the point is, you can customize it. So say you only want access to, like, your camera and texting and phone calls.
Sure.
You can do that while you're out doing, like, you can just keep yourself from having, but I've loved it. Our teens who have, our older girls who have phones with apps have used it also, and it's great for experimenting and, like, what are the things that I'm actually not using my time well.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't need to have access to this all the time.
Yeah, definitely.
And you can, if you block, like, I blocked Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, which I never go look at unless a power of darkness has seized me to find out what people are doing that's very bad. But I blocked them all, but you can also set it to block it on Safari also. So you can block Safari, but I use that often enough for things I need that I don't block it. I don't tend to waste time on Safari.
No.
So basically you target the things that you feel like are things that are keeping you from doing what you ought to be doing.
When I just don't have Facebook on my phone, so I could, like, get on my laptop and look at it. But I realized, like, wow, that's just a bunch of squawky noise in Facebook. Like, not pleasant. It's like everybody's fighting all the time. And all the funny part is, Facebook is, like, all Christians, like, that I'm friends with, because I don't usually friend people. Like, very occasionally I'll friend someone. Most of the time, I just, like, accept whoever. And the people who are friending me, it's because, you know, whatever, they call it canon or Moscow, or they've read my book or something. It's a lot of Christians. And just, like, a bunch of squawking on there all the time, denouncing people, making announcements about
this and that. I think that's because you wrote a book on feminism, because that's not my experience.
Maybe. But it is just a lot of just fighting, like, really fighting. And it's hilarious how much I'm like, you know what I don't need is that.
Anyways, what I enjoy about this is it helps you kind of troubleshoot your own, like, if you need access to your banking app or something, can keep that. But you can just say only at some times is my phone available for me to do
that's a
these
good
other
tip.
Things.
I like it.
Yeah, anyways, I really enjoy it. So,
yeah.
Anyways, everybody, that's my hot tip.
All right.
All right, until next time.
Bye.